Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, a podcast about television. It's right there in the name. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason.
Back for more punishment,
I think we are. And doling it out.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. Watch out, Australia. We could be coming for you. This episode may be dubbed in some countries into other languages. More on that later.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting
Make
thought.
Make me sound smarter.
That's
Make
right.
Make mine English.
Yes, they're going to dub
accent.
Us. They're going to dub us into English from American. Sad, really. But
from American. Yeah, definitely. American and English are totally different things.
Totally different. So we got to start with the power rankings finally returning. Did Woo-hoo! I say finally? I didn't mean to put any pressure on you there. The returning, hooray, courageously, triumphantly returning.
Courageously.
My favorite part, by the way, is that a story dated March the 1st says, well, it's February.
So, that's
because they didn't post it right away. They,
no, they
waited and posted it later. But
story of my life.
Anyway, there. It's March, and it's time for the delay to end the power rankings return. And these are your dramas to watch, knowing that the rules are, of course, very important. Needs to have aired something new in the last year. And are there any other rules? I think that might be it.
That's pretty much it. And it's not really a rule, but as I noted at the end, the Americans would have fallen in this category and would have been on this list, but they're coming up so close. March 18th is their return. I thought, like,
take a pause.
Let's judge it on the new season.
Right. So I looked at this story and I thought, is he going to do it? Is he going to put that the show that I kind of was thinking might be number one? And you did. This is amazing because I've only seen the first whatever have aired six episodes of Counterpart on Starz. You've seen all 10, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And God, that show is good.
Yeah. it's kind of a stunner. And I haven't seen it picking up a lot of hype elsewhere, but maybe it has. I haven't been paying attention.
We just have to do our part. No, it's a little under the radar because Starz is under the radar.
Yep.
Although I definitely am sure there are people out there who are following it. Because Outlander is also, you know, it's got a big following too, but it's on Starz, and so it's a little bit under the radar, and I get that. It's not everybody has Starz, and it's not a channel that people track, but it is so good, and I know we've been talking about it, like, for the last 5 or 6 weeks, but it every episode, I just think, oh my God, I can't believe, like, more complexity. They do some stuff that they slow play, and because it's spooling out in weekly installments, you get, like, these mysteries that you don't even realize. There is a twist, sort of, or a reveal, let's say, at the end of episode 6, mm-hmm. which is the one that I believe I just saw, that you don't even realize you're being slow played.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're like, oh, we didn't actually know that piece of information, did we? And now it all comes together. And there's a lot of that. And it does the things that science fiction and fantasy TV, I feel like, does the best, which is it is adding a whole other, like, layer or dimension on how we view, you know, real life, or how we view personalities. Sometimes it's issues. Sometimes it's character drama. And a little bit like Lost. I felt like Counterpart is really good at using these ridiculous kind of premises to do some really good character work. And, like, J.K. Simmons is playing two fascinating characters, and what a performance, or set of performances. I don't even know what to say about
it. But, like, set of performances,
like we said about Tatiana Maslany, right? Like, and she was playing different people, and we're here he's playing two versions of the same person, and yet you can tell who he is in every scene. You can tell which one of those two people he is, even when they put on the other one's clothing. You can tell, and it's just an amazing performance. And there are a bunch of other really good performances in it. It's like, it is, if you're somebody who shied away from this show because you're like, yeah, I know you said there was, like, a science fictional or supernatural kind of twist to it, and I'm not into that stuff. I don't know, if you like kind of spy/character drama, it's because it's a combo. If you like something like maybe the American Americans. Like, I think those people should not shy away from the fact that there is this one foundational science fiction premise, because this show is, you know, I love sci-fi shows, but I know they're not for everyone. But this one is like, it has all of the things that you'd expect from a prestige drama, a really good character drama. And the sci-fi layer actually just adds a whole other layer of goodness to it. It's not a distraction. It's not something to take you out of the metaphor of, for the present day or something like some shows do. It is just like an added complication that makes everybody's lives who are in this show more difficult. It's great.
I love it. I love the fact that you said it's like an added complication. That's a great way to treat it. And that way you can do so much more with it rather than like, it's this thing, you know, it's so sci-fi, and it's like, well, no, it's, everybody just accepts it. There's so many levels to it. We don't want to ruin it for anybody, but just start watching this damn thing.
Yeah, really, really good. Yeah, the A word second, which I think is great. That is, you know, I'm going to ask you in a few places, like, you say dramas, like, I mean, some of these things, it's hard to quantify things that are dramas and things that are comedies. There's a lot of overlap. The A word is absolutely a family drama, but it's also funny.
Yeah, it can be funny. I definitely think it's more like Atlanta. Atlanta's a comedy, but it can also be really serious. Right. A lot of those ones in the 30-minute spot are really tough. Detectorist, I see Detectorist as a drama, even though it's funny.
Yeah, and I would call that a comedy. That on the list, and I was like, I'm not going to complain. Detectorist is way up on my list, too. I feel like it's a comedy with some dramatic elements to it, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. These are all labels. These are all good shows.
These are all good labels, yeah.
Yeah.
And fun stuff.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff is recurring from your previous list. Black Mirror and the Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams both sneak onto the list after having not been on. You brought Humans in for like a little bit of a victory lap because it's about to time out, which was nice.
Yeah, Humans gets a victory lap because it is timing out on the 20th, actually. Legion is it returned from being bumped when it was still eligible because other stuff was really great during that time. Altered Carbon is fresh.
Altered Carbon is new. Yeah, that was good to see that one on there.
Right. And Ozark is a fresh one for me because I finally got around to seeing it with my friend Jason.
I have not even heard about that show, I think. Unless you mention it on this podcast and I've just forgotten, and then it just pops right up in there. That's, yes, Jason Bateman, who you're in the fantasy football league with? Baseball league? Mm-hmm. Fantasy baseball league.
NL only fantasy baseball.
Fantasy baseball. A lot of a commitment there. Anyway, yeah. I love Jason Bateman too because he's one of my people, right? The Jasons who were born in like 1970. He's like, there are lots of us, as it turns out. There are lots of us, but he's like my contemporary. I've always watched his career thinking, you know, he's basically my contemporary. I would have gone to school with him, and then he would have had to be Jason B, and I would have been Jason S. Yeah.
And you know what? The series is really good. It's a little tall. I mean, it's different because it's shot in the Ozark, and it's like that whole area is just a trip. And, you know, again, I put it off because Dan reviewed it. He was like middle of the road on it. Other critics really liked it, and it gets better with each episode. I just took a long time to get to it, so that's why it's there. But I'm really loving it. It stands out as something, I think, kind of totally different. And I was happy to finally get to that one. And yeah, this getting back and putting this list together was a lot of fun. It was like a remembering to be able to do it. Some oversights and things that you messed up last time. Some of them fell off. There's some new ones. I think that, you know, obviously The Americans is coming out soon, but there's a lot of really good shows that are coming out. And I think there's a lot of stuff that's still in contention.
Yeah, I mean, Westworld was on the list, and it's going to be coming back in a few months. So we've got some.
Yeah, so that's coming. And they like rectifies off because of its eligibility, right. Westworld eligibility, The Crown eligibility. And I have not seen episode 7. The ones that were still eligible were Manhunt, Unabomber, and Mr. Mercedes from the last time I did the list, which was October. And when I got into November, I did the comedy list, and then I stopped because we were prepping stuff for year end. But yeah, a lot to contemplate in all that.
That's great. I love the power rankings. Love to have those lists. It's good to have it back. You did a review of Hard Sun, which is a show I had not even heard of, but it's from Neil Cross, who did Luther, and Luther is great. Your verdict on Hard Sun seems to be watch Luther instead, according to the HollywoodReporter.com. So,
yeah,
ouch.
You know, yeah, it's, I struggle with it because, you know, I wanted to really like this show. You know, like there were so many things that, there's so many things coming in March. Dan and I were chopping up this list of things that are coming, and it's like, oh my God, there's so much good TV in March. And, you know, I like Neil Cross, and I thought, okay, this should be pretty good. And wow, it's a miss, and it's a big miss. Not like it's terrible, but it's like, there's not really any reason to watch it. As I've said many times in this podcast, I don't mind violence. I can actually sustain a pretty high level of violence. There's a lot of violence in Altered Carbon, but the violence in Hard Sun is just like, oh my God, this is like blood porn, man. I cannot watch more of this stuff. And it's a lot because the British cops don't use guns. Basically, there's a lot of knives. There's a lot of stabbing and bleeding and razor blades. And I'm like, oh, you guys, please stop cutting people. That's literally what I was saying by the third episode. And, you know, the problem is it's not a very good detective series. As I tried to write in my review, there's a woman who plays a detective in the series. And if you just plucked her and her character out and had Neil Cross write an entire like Luther-like series around her, I would totally watch the hell out of that. But the concept is he wrote it based on a David Bowie song called 5 Years, you know, back in the Ziggy Stardust days. And it was like 5 Years is basically about a guy realizing that the world's going to end in 5 years, and what do we do, and what does he do? Neil Cross used that as his jumping off point, saying, I'm going to create this detective story and have all this nonsense in it and all these backstories. But basically the big thing is we hacked into the British intelligence and MI5, somebody did, and found out that the world's going to end in 5 years. And we can't let the public know that because they'll go insane. And none of it works. Literally none of it works. The cop part doesn't work. The you know, how they handle what would you do if your life is going to end in 5 years doesn't work. And I don't know. Nothing seems to work for me.
I hesitate to bring this up, but there NBC at some point, and I don't know what happened, but NBC did some development work on a series called The Last Policeman, which is based on a trilogy of novels. And I don't know if that they did a pilot commitment. I don't know if that went and died and they didn't make it or what. But that was a book series about a cop in a world where the world was about to end and everybody knew.
Right.
And those books are really great, and I think that would make a really good TV series. Maybe not the one that NBC was thinking of making. Maybe it will come back around again. But what was great there is that there's really a question of, like, when all the fabric of society is falling apart and your job as a cop is to hold the fabric of society together, at what point do you decide it's not worth it? or at what point you say, this is my duty, is to try to hold this thing together. So it's an interesting premise. It's a little bit like what we said with Counterpart. It's like, you've got to, how do you tell a cop show inside a somewhat science fictional premise? But sorry to hear that it's not that great. Neil Cross, I mean, as a person who watches Doctor Who, he wrote a couple of Doctor Who episodes a couple of years ago, and one of them was great and one of them was kind of terrible. And I wonder if he just swings for the fences and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. I mean, Luther worked for me, even though it probably maybe outlasted its usefulness, and it's coming back again. There's another one coming in 2018, I think. But he did a series, what was it? Crossbones for NBC that didn't work at all either. But, I didn't work for me, I don't think. But yeah, Hard Sun, I think conceptually I would love to see I mean, it's been done in film and I think probably in TV before, the idea that the world's going to end at X amount of time and how do you react? But he does not handle that part well. I think that the idea of like everybody going crazy is one thing, but some people were going to say, hey, you know what? 5 years is a long time, and you can do all the things you wanted to do in the last 5 years, provided the people who are burning the world down are not going to make it terrible for you. But yeah, it's so much to explore. I hope that Last Policeman series becomes something. But Hard Sun is a hard pass.
Okay.
Well,
you knew that was coming, right? Let's see what else we should mention. Atlanta is back. I haven't seen it, but your review that we talked about last week is posted now. I'll put a link in the show notes to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Robin season.
It's yep. good. Mm-hmm. It's very solid.
Not surprising. Good. No, good stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny because I took this approach. I just wanted to go circle back. I took this approach. I think I said this last week where I was saying, like, you know, these guys are all in movies now. You know, even that Zazie Beetz is going to be, you know, in Deadpool 2 and in the main female role. They don't really need this TV show anymore. And I said that without really, that was like just my, I was like, and you know, FX is always like, sure, go do your thing. We believe in the creator. And I had a line in my reviews saying at some point they must have wondered, are these guys even going to come back? I mean, Brian Tyree, the guy who plays Paperboy, the actor, he's a Broadway actor. So he's gone back to Broadway. He's done some other things. And Brian Tyree Henry, I believe is his name. I can spacing it right now. But one of the things that I had said was like, these guys don't need the show anymore. Well, recently interviews that Donald Glover's been giving, he just said the same thing. He just said, I don't even think we need this show. He goes, I saw a quote today that said from him saying, if FX told us the show was canceled, I would just go like, dope. Okay. So like, yeah, they don't need it. They don't need it. It's just, it's a show that can, which is good. I think creatively, if you don't need something, you can be as weird as you want to be.
Great. Looking forward to seeing it.
Yep.
And I should also mention, we'll put a link in the show notes to your piece about do critics make it harder to produce great TV, which basically we talked about last week, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. It just hadn't posted yet. It's in there. I'm kind of two minds about this. I mean, I believe that the creator shouldn't, like, they shouldn't, if it's going to affect their work, reading recaps or instant reviews of their stuff, they should just not. And assume that, you know, most of their viewers are not either, right. And just like, mm-hmm. let it be its own thing. Because I mean, I do a few podcasts where I will watch an episode and then we will talk about it and I get something out of it. And I think people, you know, a lot of people don't have that water cooler moment. And they tell me like, oh, I like Monday morning because I listen to you guys talking about Game of Thrones or something like that. That's great. But mm-hmm. if I was the creator of that show, I think I would not listen. And that is also fine because like what your audience, you can't control what your audience is going to take away from something, and you probably should just not even worry about it and just do your thing and make the work. But I get how commentary about television has changed, and I do believe we've talked about this before, like everything can be picked apart because it's all made up, and mm-hmm. that the reality is either you're under its spell or you're not. Like, and if you're sitting there picking something apart, it's because you're not under its spell. And that is, I think that's true. There's never been a perfect work, right? So I think great movie and TV shows and books and comics and whatever else, if you're going along with them and you put your faith in the creators and you believe it, you're just along for the ride. And the moment that you start just like being like, why is this going on? It's a symptom of you not being in its spell anymore. And that's a failure,
right.
But that's just, it's not that the mistake is not the reason that it's a bad show. It's a bad show because you got so jostled out that you stopped enjoying it and just see the mistakes.
Yeah. That's definitely part of it. It's one of the angles in play there.
Yeah. But it's a good piece. I think I really like these items you do that are like, what is the nature of criticism? How does modern television handle criticism differently than maybe past television did? How do creators handle the internet? And like when I started doing my TV blog in the 90s, like I was talking to a friend of mine who wrote on that blog last week, and we were like, why did, like, we got emails from like I wrote a piece about J.J. Abrams changing the premise of Alias after the Super Bowl, and I got an email from him the next day after I wrote it.
Yeah.
Saying thanks for writing it. We got an unbidden email from Ken Rosenthal, who did Everybody Loves Raymond. We hadn't mm-hmm. written about it, and he was like, hey, what do you guys think of Everybody Loves Raymond? Like, he was asking for feedback, right? This is early,
yeah, right.
early days, right? Mm-hmm. Things have come a long way, though, in the world. The world has changed
yes.
a lot.
Phil Rosenthal. Yes.
Oh, sorry, Phil Rosenthal. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
that's right. The Everybody Loves Raymond guy. What do you guys think of my show? And we heard from, you know, some other like angry actors who we mocked and blog posts and stuff. And it was a smaller world, right, back then. Today, I can't even imagine how anybody who makes anything like with millions of people watching you just have to tune out the noise because there's just so much noise. I don't know.
Definitely.
Fascinating. Anyway, I love your essays on this stuff. It's great.
Thank you.
You want to do some letters?
Let's do that.
What's the thing we do here? People send us letters and tweets and
totally
things.
Did.
All right. John in the 925 wrote in about wanting to praise Altered Carbon, I think. He says, "Hi, Tim and Jason. There are two inherent problems with dystopian futuristic sci-fi shows, and Altered Carbon may have overcome both. The first is the look. Most don't have the budget for special effects, well-photographed exterior shots, and varied set designs. A clutter of computer screens, dark interiors with sparks flying. Can't they call an electrician? What is it?" That's true. Good point. Star Trek, call an electrician. "The bridge of a spaceship. These are all visual cliches. Altered Carbon is the drop-dead gorgeous homage to Blade Runner. The second problem with shows set in the future or an alternate universe is the story structure. It's nearly impossible to write a satisfying season arc, which also sets up for a coherent series finale sometime in the future. The future is endless. My time and interests aren't. You either have to do standalone episodes like Star Trek or mostly self-contained seasons. I'm only halfway through Altered Carbon, sort of like me. Here's what I expect. The mystery will be solved. The lead actor who will get re-sleeved. Next season, the cop, not a cop, will solve another mystery without too much of the backstory or future story bleeding in. John in the 925. Now, without spoiling anything, and I haven't seen the whole thing, I think he's right. I think that's the kind of beauty of it, and maybe that's one of the reasons Altered Carbon works. I don't know.
Yeah, I as much as I was not thrilled with the last two episodes, didn't go off the rails. I think they decided that they wanted to complete the story and tell some things. I think people will be satisfied that it wraps up. I'm a much more nebulous person, but at the same time, even when they're wrapping things up and explaining things, by the very nature of the series, when characters can be quote unquote re-sleeved, there's plenty of stuff that can happen, in the future. So,
right.
That show's going to go on. I would be really stunned. If it didn't go on. I think it's going to be a player, worldwide.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Anyway, that's a good one. But I think it was a weird creative decision to have in the last episode of Altered Carbon. He goes to Big Sur and comes up with a commercial jingle. Strange.
Yes, that's some people are going to be surprised when they see that.
Not really in fitting with the premise. Anyway, here's another letter. This is from Donnie. Oh, we got several on this front, and this is good information. Donnie in the 206 wrote in and said, "Regarding your comments last week about Netflix doing previously on segments for their shows, they do offer individual season recaps for much of their original content, including House of Cards, Daredevil, Stranger Things, Narcos, and The Crown. These recaps are hidden in the trailers and more section for each series. I first noticed this with Sense8, a show so wonderfully convoluted that sometimes I feel I need recaps in the middle of each episode." Donnie in the 206. And then Alex in the 908 wrote in and pointed out they do it for all their actual originals. They just don't do it for faux originals like Travelers, which of course is a Canadian show that Netflix has licensed in the US. I hate that Netflix calls all of these exclusives originals because they are not. They are actually different things. Why do they do this? And Rick in the 703 wrote in to say, "I really hope streaming services start proceeding all their new seasons with a recap of previous seasons, as you guys discussed. I wish Amazon had done this for the newly released second block of The Tick, which came 6 months after the end of the first block. Jeff Bezos could have paid for an editor to put together a clip recap out of his pocket change or out of increased Echo sales from product placement in one of the episodes." All good things. And yeah, absolutely. I checked on it. There are, if you're watching a true Netflix original, I always just ignored the trailers and more section. But what the more is, it turns out, among the mores is a previously on, like a season recap.
That was, I just don't even know that was there. That's kind of
surprise.
Stunning. I wish they could make that more user-friendly.
Right? Like, what I said last week was, like, when you start watching, they know everything about you. When you start watching a new season, I almost want, like, on episode one on the menu for it to say, see the recap first.
Yes. Would you like a recap of this before you begin?
Yeah, like, play episode one with recap or something like that.
Or and just be straightforward and say, "We are looking into your living room.
Yes.
We see you.
You don't
play the recap.
You don't remember what happened last time. We know.
Look, and your place is a mess.
Yeah.
We'll queue it up. You clean things up. Come back and let's play the recap."
Exactly. So thanks, mm-hmm. Netflix. Get on it. But it's good that those exist. Thank you to Alex and Donnie for setting us right. And yeah, shell out for your non-original originals, too. That would be good. Catherine from the 415, the area code of record, but now in the 203.
Oh.
A little Jersey, I want to say. She says, I was listening to the podcast and the guy complaining about figure skating stuff, and it prompted me to write in. In the past, I've really detested NBC's coverage, particularly of the opening and closing ceremonies. This year, they did a couple of really great things. They had the whole streaming Olympics app, which was great. It let you watch the ceremonies without commentary at all, as well as whole events that they only showed tiny pieces of on broadcast. It was great, especially if you're a nerd for certain sports. They also announced they're rebranding that old Universal HD channel into the Olympics channel, which is supposed to be year-round Olympics 24/7. That might be a good solution for Jason's desire for Olympics every 2 years. Yeah, I can't wait for all the curling to be on the Olympics channel, and I'm not kidding. I can't wait for all. I was very excited with all the live stuff that they did. I got to watch the curling final live until I fell asleep, and I watched the rest when I woke up the next morning because it was up. It started at like 11 p.m. Pacific.
Yes. Was no slight on the sport. You were just tired.
It was very. You know, I stopped at the fifth end of the halftime basically, and because they have to resurface. Do they resurface? They just take a break. I don't think they resurface the ice after the fifth end. But it was one of those things where it's like, there's no way. Sort of like when they went, I was in Ireland watching Game 7 of the World Series 2 years ago, and they had that rain delay, and I was like, forget it. it's 3 a.m. There's no way I'm going to stay awake through a rain delay. Just go to bed. Tell me who won in the morning. Anyway, this is really good. I agree with this. NBC's been streaming live events for a while now. It's showing it on TV that is really the new thing, where they've actually had a bunch of live stuff for the Olympics. And the cool thing about the Olympics is there's this international television feed, and basically every English speaking country gets access to essentially just a TV show of all the Olympics coverage, and they can use it with commentary or not. And that's a lot of what you see. And usually NBC, you know, takes the commentary off and puts their own announcers on. And they usually have like a camera or two at the venue so they can show you the commentators, and they can show you maybe their interviewer down at the bottom. But the rest of the stuff they use is from that international pool that the IOC generates. And I think the pictures are all shared and the graphics are all localized into different languages. So when you go online, you just see the raw, it's the English feed. You know, it'll be people with all sorts of accents, Canadian, American, New Zealand, Australian, British, Irish. There's lots of different accents because it's just an international feed. But it's all there and it's all live, and it's pretty good stuff. And if you wonder, there was that big moment. I don't know if you remember seeing this. The most surprising gold medal was that snowboarder who won a skiing gold medal.
Oh, right. Yes. Uh-huh.
And the way they did that was, you know, NBC showed the first 20, because the 20 top ranked skiers in the world go in that first block of 20, and then everybody else goes, but there's no way they're going to win. And she was like 30th down the hill. And so when they replayed that throughout the whole games as this amazing moment, it's got this totally random announcer on it, or two announcers on it, and it's because they're from the international feed. And NBC didn't, their announcers were like eating a sandwich at that point.
Yeah, they were long gone. Who was going to win it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then she won it. So anyway, I think it's actually one of the cool things about the Olympics that they do those feeds, that NBC makes them all accessible, and it's and I'm glad that they're gonna do the Universal HD thing as an Olympics channel, because there's some interesting Olympic sports. And
I would love an Olympics channel.
Yeah,
I would go back and watch old Olympic matches. That's, are you kidding me?
That's pretty good too. That's a great idea. I wonder if they're doing that. Why not? We'll have to check it out. Anyway, that was a good one. Thank you to Catherine. Always in the 415 in her heart.
Nice.
Sure.
In our hearts, yes. Very good.
Okay. This is Olivier from the 760, formerly of the +33. So
okay.
I don't know my country codes. Olivier sounds French, but of course +33 is France. Oh, man. Yeah.
Olivier was pretty much, yeah.
Oh, I should have read
I had a neighbor once named Olivier, so it's definitely a...
I should have read the letter, because he says. So here's Olivier's letter. I wanted to chime in about dubbing. When I grew up in France, dubbing was the default, and you could hardly find anything in original versions with subtitles. It's still the case today for the most part, although with streaming and digital TV, more and more content providers offer the option to choose the language, just as Netflix does for Dark, that German series. But if you want your show or movie to really make it in France, you have to provide a dubbed version, as the vast majority of people will only watch it dubbed. Outside of the major cities, most theaters, for instance, still only show dubbed versions of the Hollywood blockbusters. Even though since I moved to the US, I can't stand it anymore, dubbing is generally very well done in France, and some of the voice artists are quite famous. The problem with subtitles is it requires more effort to watch, and it can distract you from the action of the story. It's absolutely true. I think the fact that good dubbed versions of movies or shows are not available in the US is a conscious effort from the film and TV industry to protect local productions by keeping everyone else out, as they know subtitle movies will only make it in small theaters and be seen by very few people. I think this is really interesting. I don't know the historical origin of it. It certainly seems to be common feeling in the US that people don't want to watch subtitles, but it's also true that people don't want to watch things that are dubbed in from another language.
Yeah, I mean, this
Americans are terrible.
It's a very fast. Yeah, no, there's your bottom line. I totally back that. Oh my God, I totally back that.
Right,
but that's a fascinating question. I like that one.
I think it's a really good question. And this used to happen, and it doesn't happen anymore, where you'd have films that were released that were dubbed, and you get good. And now it only happens with animated, like the Miyazaki movies get dubbed into English, because you're not, you know, there is mouth movement and stuff, but it's like, it's a cartoon. It's already kind of being put together in animated movies. You can do that. I'm not sure that, like, nobody does live action dubbing anymore. It just doesn't happen in film anyway in America. Right. Maybe it is that Americans have just decided, look, if you aren't going to make a movie in English, we're not interested. But, except in the art houses where they show the movies with subtitles. There's a really interesting cultural gap there. So Olivier, thanks for pointing it out. Americans. Terrible.
Americans suck.
Antonio from Spain tweeted at us that TV networks in Spain dub everything, and the voice actors are really good. So it sounds like this is one of the things, is that when you're in a place that does a lot of dubbing, they actually make an effort to have good actors. But Antonio says, translation.
I saw that. Yeah, it was good.
Shows are famous for dumb errors like on Star Trek. He says they might go through a wormhole.
Well, I didn't think we were going to have to check the box, but maybe we will.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, now that Star Trek is on CBS All Access and Netflix, they can go through the wormhole. Anyway,
I'm going to be here all week for that last one. Very
good. That's good. Yeah, tip your waitress. You. Mm-hmm. Oh my. as George Takei would say. Tom K wrote in and said, as an English teacher in Germany, the translation and dubbing of Dark are very inaccurate. This is ironic, as the German TV industry dub everything, and extremely well, too. It's a huge industry here. Before streaming, it was impossible to watch original language TV. So this is fascinating. So maybe it really is just that Netflix is doing a bad job with their dubbing.
Netflix is just, they're like, you know, we don't even care if you know where to find the recaps. We don't actually care if you know that a new season's coming or 10 new shows are coming.
Yeah, a new show just dropped. Just forget about it. Doesn't matter. Oh, no, another one just dropped.
Another one just dropped.
That you've never
we
heard.
Don't have time to dub it.
Friend Dean from the 707 wrote in to ask, I see Kevin Costner is going to be on a show called Yellowstone on the Paramount Network. What the heck is the Paramount Network?
Well, yeah, the Paramount has been trying to get into the business for a while. The Paramount Network took over what was Spike, and they just have assets, and they're a very big company, as you know. Viacom was there, Paramount. So Paramount's a big company, so they wanted their own TV channel. Now they have it. They did the revamped version of Heathers, which has been vilified for being terrible, and of course, its fifth episode has a school shooting.
Yeah,
scene.
And they apparently have delayed its premiere because of the school shooting. I saw the trailer for that. It looks like it looks like a disaster on so many levels.
Yeah, Dan really hate, he reviewed it and he really hated it.
Yeah.
So I would say, what is Paramount? Paramount is yet another struggling fringe cable channel.
Right. Just as, you know, carved out of the hollow remains of Spike TV, which itself was something else before that. I don't even remember. That one goes back.
Yeah, Spike was, I can't remember, but it was something else.
Yeah. David in the 415, again, area code of record, says, Tim, would you ever do a ranking of shows to watch that may have fallen through the cracks over the last 15 years? Like an unappreciated that you could go back to. You turned me on to Slings and Arrows while you were at the Chronicle and thought that more people should love it.
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. I mean, they did a lot of research on that one because you'd have to, you don't want to get people's hopes up about a show like, say, Action, that was on Fox, and if you can't find it anymore. So, yeah, but I like that idea because there are a lot of really good ones.
Yeah, what about something like
Wonderfalls, right?
What about something that, like, if you looked at like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and said, like, shows you never caught from this, you know, from since 2000 or like for the first decade
era
or something like that, there might be something there.
Yeah, I like that. Good idea.
That's a good
one. I will look at that, huh?
All right. Great job, David. Jess from the 408 is back with us. This is Jester, not Design Geek Jess. This is Jester 42. How do you rate the current late night shows? The Daily Show, Last Week Tonight, Full Frontal, Late Show, Jimmy Kimmel. Are you paying attention to that stuff or have you kind of tuned it out?
I do pay attention to it. I record it because, you know, they're all kind of like... and then just delete, you know, because right. if I don't watch it, I don't want it to take space.
Yeah, record two of them or whatever, and then just have them keep recording the next one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody's pretty strong. It's a very good field. I would, you know, when you get into Samantha Bee and you get into Last Week Tonight and John Oliver, and those, I think, are a little bit different. But as far as the actual five late night hosts, Kimmel is my favorite. I think that's the best show. To me, that's the best late night show. And I think that Colbert has made huge strides since the gift of Trump for him. I really worried about him when he was slumping and the ratings were slumping and CBS was pretty actively talking about you know, switching him out. That, you know, he really benefited by turning on the gas and going full politics. But I think that Seth Meyers is somebody who distinguished himself for politics. And I really appreciated that straightforward stuff. The actual interviews he does are less interesting to me. So I get everything that I like in everybody else's show on Kimmel. I mean, Kimmel has become much more political and of everybody is probably getting the most notice for it. So for me, Kimmel is the funniest. I think he's got great guests. And when he gets political, I think it's good. And I think I just like his sense of humor. So
The weeklies are I like that format, like with Samantha Bee and and John Oliver, the weekly show where they get maybe a little smaller staff, but they get a whole week to put together a solid show, and then they walk away for a week. And there are more of those coming. Netflix just signed Hasan Minhaj from The Daily Show. He's going to do a weekly, you know, news comedy thing on Netflix, and they picked him up for 32 weeks. 32 weekly episodes. So they're going that, and they also have the Soup rebooted with now I'm gonna blank on his name. What's his name?
I wish I could help you because I can't.
Joel McHale.
They rebooted this.
Joel McHale.
McHale. Yes,
the
Soup
on
E. That's gonna be
And that's another
on Netflix now, isn't it? Right?
That's another weekly Netflix thing, and then they've got Letterman Monthly on Netflix now, and it's like that's kind of interesting. Where Netflix is like, all right, we're gonna try this out, and there's somebody else that they just signed, and I'm trying to remember who it was who they also signed for a weekly. So they're
like, we'll just put everybody in late night. We'll own that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're trying that. So, you know, and then I'm glad this. What prompted Jess's tweet was John Oliver coming back, and I'm very glad to have John Oliver back because that's a can't miss for
so
me.
Fun,
I watch that on
mm-hmm.
Sunday night. I love that show. It's great.
We have a lot of listeners named Jess.
We do. It's strange.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, though, is from JJ. I don't know if one of those stands for Jess.
Maybe it's Jess.
It's JJ from the 415. Man, the Bay Area is representing on this show.
Yeah, coming in strong.
I'm increasingly frustrated with network shows and the time of delay between shows. When will the networks wise up and just play episode after episode? Networks don't make sense anymore. This is the whole binge versus have it go out weekly. Question.
Yeah, I think that's very funny. I think it's the answer is never. That's the answer.
Yeah.
But I think JJ's where everybody else is and should be in the future when it's when we're all streaming as our way of life. But I don't think everything streams well. I think some things stream better than others, and I think there's value in a really good show being doled out every other week. I think there's no value in a show that's works better as a streaming and kind of suffers waiting week to week, being in that form. There's no good fix, but I just prefer prefer having options. And in the network space, you can't. And by the way, I just can't with network, as you know. So every time I try to get if I get a network show on the list of things that I might have to review, I'm like, how about we farm this out, or you can do it, Dan?
This goes back to that think piece that you wrote also, mm-hmm. which is, I think if you're if it's fascinating, maybe it is just that some shows are better one way or another. They're all going to be binged eventually. But mm-hmm. in terms of the initial rollout, one way to affect how your work is consumed is right. to if it's not a show that is going to survive the analysis week by week, that should probably be dropped in a binge, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there are probably shows that are bad fits for weekly release, and there are probably ones that are good fits too. And the question is, if you've got a good idea, I wonder if that will happen, where at some point, you know, Netflix will be like, you know, this isn't for us, or Stars will be like, yeah, this actually would work better in a binge, and we don't do that, so you should go that, or if it'll just be kind of catch as catch can. I don't know.
I like how Hulu kind of has a hybrid of both options periodically, and they tend to do week to week more, but they're not holding steadfast to that. They've done many binges and things like that. But yeah.
I watch Runaways weekly, and that could have been a binge. That would have been fine to watch that all in one go. But Counterpart, I'm enjoying week by week. So
yes, yeah. Counterpart, I love week by week because it's so complicated. But as people have noted, like fun little series in Mozart in the Jungle is greatly. It's just binge. I love to binge it. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Red Oaks was like that too.
Just definitely.
Get it done. All right, just a couple more. Mike from the 609 wrote in and said, love the show. Was wondering if you've heard of the latest cop, not a cop show.
Ooh.
Well, it's ABC, so you haven't. Uh-huh. Okay, right. Deception, in which a magician helps the FBI
solve crimes. I did hear about this.
They asked
me to review it, and I said, there's a magician? You might as well make him a mime. That's how likely I'm going to do a magician show.
I love that. That's great. So he says, from ABC's website, when his career is ruined by scandal, superstar magician Cameron Black, sure that's his name, has only one place to turn to practice his art of deception, influence, and illusion, the FBI. Really?
Oh my God.
Using
really?
Every trick in the book and inventing new ones, he will help the government catch the world's most elusive criminals while staging the biggest delusions of his career. So back to Mike. So we're to believe the FBI's best hope would be a disgraced magician, and that the world's most elusive criminals would be fooled by sleight of hand?
Yeah.
Is every week going to end with a bad guy stopping mid-crime to watch a magic act? I had my opt-out moment early in the trailer when men in tactical gear in an airport hangar had something on their uniforms explode and pour out red smoke a la the 1960s Batman TV series, after which a plane explodes, and in the aftermath, the magician shows up and joins the investigation. Have you seen this? And what not a cop could possibly be next?
Oh, definitely mimes. Mimes.
That's right. We'll call it Silent but Deadly.
Yeah.
It's a murder investigation where there's always a mime.
Yeah, and it stinks.
It's also, yeah, also everybody farts a lot, but it's television. You will never know. You just have to imagine that part of it. Okay. Art from the 425 with our last letter. I was listening to the latest show right after it dropped as I was getting ready for my monthly international business trip. As it happens, I downloaded the entire season of Altered Carbon to watch on the plane. And so given your advice, I put a few alternatives on the iPad at the last minute. Again, lots of sex, lots of nudity, and you're on a plane and there's a kid right behind you and it's bad. He says, here's the thing though. On a previous trip, I actually binged the entire season of Westworld, which was available on the in-flight entertainment system. A lot of naked people in that show, I have to say. So I'm questioning what the proper airplane etiquette really is. I'll see what I do when I take the trip tomorrow, but in general, airline-provided content isn't terribly sanitized. Don't worry, though. I have enough personal responsibility not to watch something inappropriate with a kid next to me, no matter if it's available or not.
Yeah, there's a... I gotta say, there's a lot of dicks in Westworld. It's just,
yeah,
and I don't mean annoying people.
There's just that's right. That the man in black, he's a jerk. I don't know about this, and I think there's a question of like, are you in business class? Are you in coach? But like, if I'm sitting just randomly in a seat with two strangers in my row or three strangers in my row, and I can just go boop boop boop, show me the boobs on Westworld and the dicks. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I would be really uncomfortable watching like a bunch of naked people having sex on a screen that the person sitting next to me for 5 hours or 12 hours can just like look over and be like, oh, that's what that guy's watching. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't seem. So I wonder what the airline policies are on that.
That is really surprising because in Westworld, when they get to the Maeve part of the story, Maeve is she's on the like table naked for long stretches of time, and they're working on her, and she's just naked, and it's just full frontal nudity for long stretches of time. So I'm surprised by that, but whatever. You know what? It should be, you should only watch that in the middle row.
So I think what we've learned here is that streaming and premium cable have ruined airlines because yes. It used to be you could count on network TV to have standards that could be kept, and now anything goes. Except plane crashes. They probably won't show you plane crashes, although maybe they don't even care about that anymore. I don't know if I ever told you this story. Like, I watched World War Z on an airplane, and apparently there's a horrible plane crash toward the end of that movie. And I know this because Brad Pitt is on a plane with a bunch of zombies and it's looking really bad. And then they cut to Brad Pitt and he's on the ground with wreckage around him.
Oh,
and I thought, you know, I think the plane crashed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they edited
and
that.
Virgin America said, we're not. Nope.
No,
we're not going to show that to you.
But I did not want to see a plane crash anywhere near anything I watch. No, ever.
Sure. Right. I mean, that makes sense. So
right.
I don't know. I wonder if like if you're in first class and you've got your personal video screen, it's like, oh, up here, anything goes up here with
maybe you get the
fancy
stuff
people.
The first,
there's as much nudity as you want. And would you like some champagne, sir?
Yeah.
But maybe they just literally don't care. And it's your problem if you're sitting next to somebody with your kid and they decide to put Westworld on the TV.
I don't know, and of course
again, we're talking about nudity and sex, and I'll circle back around to the theme of this show, which is Americans are terrible. We could have been talking about grotesque violence as well.
Oh yeah, you just put Hard Sun in there. Oh my god, stop cutting people. That should have been my headline. God,
yeah, that's through the wormhole though, right there.
Yeah. That's through the wormhole. If that's not the headline of this.
No, it's either. Now, the people listening have been listening for an hour and they know what the name of this episode is, but I am going to have a hard time picking between Americans Are Terrible and Through the Wormhole.
Well, we can pretty much use Americans Are Terrible on a lot of different ones.
That's true. That's fair.
Yeah, good point.
It's pretty much every episode.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody for the letters. You can, of course, tweet at us at TVTM. Twitter lets you put like whole novels in tweets now.
Yeah.
So just go do that. Or you can podcast at TVTalkMachine.com. We'll come to us. And there's a Facebook group, Facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. It's kind of quiet because, to be honest, I don't use Facebook much anymore because I don't like Facebook. But
well,
it's there.
We're kind of all off that. Yeah,
it's true, and that's it. But we'll be back next week with more television, because Tim, the television, you may not know this, the television never stops. It is relentless.
It never stops. The machine never stops.
It never stops. But until then, have a good weekend.
Okay, bye everybody.
Bye.